In a sunlit hospice room in Australia, Bronnie Ware sat beside a dying woman who gripped her hand and whispered, "I wish I'd had the courage to live a life true to myself, not the life others expected of me." This poignant moment would eventually touch millions of lives worldwide. What began as a simple blog post titled "The Top 5 Regrets of the Dying" exploded into a global phenomenon, reaching over 3 million readers in its first year alone and being translated into numerous languages. Oprah Winfrey later featured Ware's insights, calling them life-changing wisdom we all need to hear. This unexpected journey from palliative care worker to internationally acclaimed author began with Ware's courageous career shift, abandoning a decade in banking to follow her heart into caregiving, a decision that would ultimately reveal universal truths about what truly matters when life draws to a close. After more than a decade trapped in banking jobs that drained her spirit, Bronnie Ware experienced an epiphany during a tropical island holiday. 4 weeks later, she had quit her job, sold her possessions, and headed north to work at island resorts, mixing cocktails, wandering rainforests, and scuba diving in paradise. This radical lifestyle change freed her from even knowing what day it was, beginning a journey that would eventually lead her to the bedsides of the dying. Following her island adventure and travels through Europe, Ware found herself in England with barely any money. She took a live-in position caring for Agnes, an elderly woman living on her son's cattle farm. What began as a practical decision to save money revealed itself as beautiful, meaningful work. Despite their age difference, Ware and Agnes formed a special bond, even secretly sharing vegetarian meals together, much to the family's concern, after Agnes spontaneously declared herself vegetarian upon learning of Ware's dietary preference. When Ware eventually returned to Australia, she found herself fundamentally changed. Banking jobs that once satisfied her now left her restless and unfulfilled. Sitting by Perth's Swan River, she made two lists: what she was good at and what she loved doing. The overlap revealed her creative talents, pushing her toward a path of authenticity despite the security of good jobs that had been ingrained in her. This journey led her to Ruth, her first terminally ill patient in Sydney. Though inexperienced with sick patients, Ware treated Ruth with the tenderness she would show her own grandmother, offering foot massages, manicures, and attentive bedside conversation. Ruth's passing became a profound spiritual experience for Ware, who sat with her through her final hours, holding her hand and assuring her of her presence as Ruth's spirit began leaving her body. This intimate encounter with death became the first of many. With each patient, Ware gained not just caregiving experience, but profound life wisdom that would eventually reshape her own existence and touch millions worldwide through her writing. After caring for Ruth, Bronnie took on random care shifts while receiving minimal palliative care training. When she began caring for Stella, she reluctantly lied about her experience level at her employer's instruction, something she vowed never to do again. This early ethical dilemma established honesty as a cornerstone of her approach to both caregiving and life. Stella, a graceful woman with long white hair who had been a yoga instructor for 40 years, immediately recognized a kindred spirit in Bronnie. Upon discovering they shared interests in yoga and meditation, Stella exclaimed with relief, "Oh, thank God, I have been waiting for you for ages. I can die now." Through their shared spiritual interests, Stella became Bronnie's mentor, even as Bronnie cared for her physically. Their conversations often centered around surrender, not as giving up, but as an act requiring enormous courage. Bronnie shared stories of her own nomadic journey, including a pivotal experience camping alone by a river with minimal resources, facing her fears in nature, and learning to trust the universe. "When I was out on the very end of a thin, flimsy, bending limb, the only thing to do was surrender and see where I landed," she explained, describing how this approach had repeatedly guided her to unexpected opportunities. As Stella weakened, eating only tiny morsels like half a strawberry, she too had to surrender control over her passing. Despite her advanced illness, she experienced little pain thanks to her lifelong spiritual practice. When Bronnie had to remove Stella's wedding ring due to swelling, they all cried as this symbol of her 50-year marriage came off her finger forever. Stella's final moments reinforced Bronnie's belief in an afterlife. After falling into a coma, Stella suddenly opened her eyes and smiled at something toward the ceiling before passing peacefully. That smile cemented Bronnie's spiritual convictions. Later, when Stella's daughter Therese experienced a white cockatoo flying unusually close to her, something they both interpreted as Stella's spiritual presence, it further confirmed these beliefs. Years later, Bronnie finally confessed to Stella's family about her initial inexperience. Their beautiful acceptance, saying she had more than compensated with empathy and compassion, taught her that regardless of how difficult honesty might be to deliver, it was the only path she could walk comfortably. This lesson in integrity would become fundamental to both her caregiving and her eventual writing career. Grace became one of Bronnie's favorite clients, a tiny woman with a huge heart living in an ordinary suburban street. After more than 50 years of marriage to a controlling husband who had recently entered a nursing home, Grace had finally gained her freedom, only to be diagnosed with terminal illness caused by his long-term smoking habit. The cruel irony devastated her. All those dreams of independence she'd waited decades for would never be realized. "Why didn't I just do what I wanted? Why did I let him rule me?" she asked repeatedly, angry at herself for lacking courage. "Don't you ever let anyone stop you doing what you want, Bronnie," she insisted, making Bronnie promise. Grace hadn't wanted a grand life, just to be true to herself. She now understood her fear-based choices had allowed misery to permeate her family for decades. This regret, not living a life true to oneself, became the most common one Bronnie heard from dying people. Like Grace, Bronnie too had spent years in banking jobs that drained her soul, fearing family ridicule if she broke from expectations. As the family black sheep, she had endured decades of jokes and criticism that wore her down. Eventually, the pain became unbearable, and she found courage through meditation and compassion, first for others, then the harder task of compassion for herself. Bronnie learned to stop accepting others' judgments as her burden and to speak up when necessary. Rather than repeatedly swimming against the same painful obstacles, she chose different waters. This journey toward authenticity became her path to peace, living as who she wanted to be, one small step at a time. Grace and Bronnie grew closer as Bronnie shared her own story. Grace believed all families have their challenges and bring the greatest learning opportunities. They agreed that true love means accepting people completely without expectations. As Grace's health deteriorated, their conversations became deeply personal. Bronnie began bringing her guitar and singing for Grace, especially her favorite song, Beneath Australian Skies. Even in her final days, as Bronnie helped her back to bed, Grace sang Bronnie's song, creating what Bronnie considers the pinnacle of her musical career. On her last day, as Bronnie held her, Grace made her promise again, "Live true to your own heart. Don't ever worry what others think." This promise wasn't just to Grace, but to Bronnie herself. Months later, at Bronnie's album launch, with Grace's family in the audience, she dedicated that song to the dear woman who hadn't lived as she wanted, but who had inspired Bronnie to do so. Anthony was a man in his late 30s, with dark blonde curly hair and a natural look of mischief despite his illness. Coming from a high-profile business family, he'd been indulged throughout life, yet struggled with the pressure of filling big shoes. His low self-esteem led to reckless behavior, fast cars, police chases, expensive prostitutes, and dangerous stunts. One such act left him hospitalized with permanent damage to his organs and limbs. During his recovery, Bronnie developed a routine of reading to him, first about Middle Eastern culture, then spiritual classics that sparked deep discussions. When operations weren't fully successful, Anthony was placed in an expensive nursing home. Though initially content, bringing cheer to elderly residents, the drab environment and lack of stimulation gradually dimmed his spirit. He became a product of his environment. We're all malleable creatures, heavily influenced by our surroundings. Bronnie had seen this in her own life, from an unhealthy relationship in her early 20s to her experimental phase with drugs after escaping to the North Coast with her banking job. Though she tried various substances during that year of newfound freedom, she quickly realized excessive drug use wasn't for her. Still, she lacked self-worth, having allowed others' opinions to dominate her belief system for decades. Her happiness remained dependent on external forces, as she'd later experience during her time pulling beers at an English village pub, where boredom occasionally led to poor choices. During one weekend while her boyfriend Dean was working, Bronny joined Village Lads on a London rave, despite her misgivings. After reluctantly taking ecstasy, she suffered through a terrifying night, heart racing dangerously, sweating profusely, and seeking refuge on a bathroom window ledge. A kind stranger kept checking on her and providing water until the club closed. This experience taught her to respect her body and marked the end of her drug experimentation. Meanwhile, Anthony continued declining in his nursing home environment. His once sharp mind that discussed current affairs and showed interest in Bronny's life gradually dimmed. He refused outings, lost motivation to even call friends, and aged prematurely. His conversations devolved to bodily functions and complaints about staff. When he died years later, having refused all family gatherings and outings, Bronny couldn't help wondering about his final thoughts. Anthony's greatest failure wasn't his physical condition, but becoming a complete product of his environment, lacking any desire to challenge himself or improve his life. This realization taught Bronny to consciously choose environments that would support the direction she wanted her life to take. With renewed awareness and courage, she became more mindful about creating her life and embracing the power of choice. Through years of intimate conversations with dying patients, Bronny identified 5 regrets that appeared repeatedly. These weren't just passing comments, but profound realizations that often came with tears, anger, and deep emotional pain. The dying spoke these truths with the raw honesty that comes when social pretenses no longer matter. The first regret: I wish I'd had the courage to live a life true to myself, not the life others expected of me, was by far the most common. Patients like Grace lamented decades spent fulfilling others' expectations while neglecting their own dreams. This regret wasn't about wild adventures or fame, but about simple authenticity, the courage to honor one's true nature despite social pressure. Many realize too late that happiness comes from being true to yourself, not from pleasing others. The second most common regret, I wish I hadn't worked so hard, came predominantly from male patients, though women occasionally expressed it too. John, a dignified former diplomat, confessed this regret while watching sunset from his balcony. He had repeatedly postponed retirement despite his wife Margaret's pleas to travel and rediscover their partnership. When he finally agreed to retire in one more year, Margaret became ill and died 3 months before his retirement date. "I think I was scared," John admitted. "My role had come to define thee. Now, as I sit here dying, I see that just being a good person is more than enough in life." The third regret, "I wish I'd had the courage to express my feelings," reflected how many suppressed their emotions to maintain peace with others, settling for mediocre relationships and never becoming who they could have been. Joseph, a Holocaust survivor, repeatedly lamented never telling his son how proud he was of him. Now, with his son living overseas and their relationship strained, the opportunity was lost forever. The fourth regret, "I wish I had stayed in touch with my friends," often surfaced as patients realized how many precious friendships they'd let slip away through neglect and the busyness of life. Doris wept when speaking of her friend Lorraine, whom she hadn't seen in decades due to a minor disagreement neither could even remember. When Bronny managed to locate Lorraine and reconnect them by phone, Doris passed away peacefully that very afternoon, having experienced the joy of that renewed connection. The fifth regret, "I wish I'd had let myself be happier," revealed how many didn't realize until the end that happiness is a choice. Rosemary, a pioneering female executive who had closed her heart after escaping an abusive marriage, admitted she didn't know how to be happy and didn't think she deserved it. When Bronny encouraged her to simply give herself permission, Rosemary gradually began smiling more and occasionally laughing, accepting happiness even as her health continued declining. These regrets collectively paint a portrait of lives half-lived, dreams unfulfilled, relationships neglected, and joy postponed until it was too late. Yet they also offer a profound gift to those still living, the opportunity to make different choices before reaching life's end. Charlie, an elderly client with a philosophical bent, often spoke about his regret over his son Greg's workaholic tendencies. Greg worked excessive hours at a job he hated while neglecting his children, all in an attempt to prove himself worthy. When Bronnie asked if Greg knew Charlie loved him, Charlie hesitated, admitting he'd never directly expressed his love or pride in Greg as a person, only commenting on tasks Greg completed. Charlie believed passionately in the power of simplicity, lamenting that society had lost sight of true priorities. He advocated for community cooperation, suggesting that working together requires fewer resources and creates less waste. Though acknowledging financial difficulties in modern times, Charlie insisted individuals must change first before society would follow. After meaningful conversations with Bronnie about expressing feelings and simplifying life, Charlie arranged separate days for his children to visit. During Greg's visit, they shared an emotional breakthrough where Charlie finally told his son, "I love this man with all of my heart. He is a good son and a great man." Similar healing occurred with his daughter Marianne the following day. When Charlie passed peacefully, Greg and Marianne sat together holding their father's hands, a united family after years of distance. A year later, Greg emailed Bronnie, sharing that he'd sold their large home, taken a transfer with reduced pay to a small country town, and now enjoyed more time with his children in a simpler life with better quality. He signed off with the meaningful phrase, "Keep it simple." This theme of simplicity echoed through many patients' stories. Florence, whose old money had trapped her in paranoia and suspicion, contrasted sharply with patients who found peace through letting go of material concerns. John, the former diplomat who regretted working too hard, reflected that balance is what's important and that possessions meant nothing compared to time with loved ones. Pearl, a cheerful 63-year-old terminal patient determined to die at home with her three dogs, shared how finding true purpose had transformed her emptiness after losing her husband and daughter decades earlier. When you are doing work you love, it doesn't feel like work. It is simply a natural extension of who you are. She believed anyone could find purpose in their work if in the right field. Money is so misunderstood. If you totally love what you do, you become more open to the flow of money because you're happier as a person. These insights collectively revealed that simplicity isn't about deprivation, but about clarity, recognizing what truly matters and releasing what doesn't. For most dying patients, what mattered in the end wasn't accomplishments, possessions, or status, but love, authentic connection, and the sense of having lived in alignment with their deepest values. Elizabeth, a 55-year-old former alcoholic dying from her illness, confided in Bronnie, "I wish I'd stayed in touch with my friends, my real friends." Her family had removed all alcohol and banned her drinking friends from visiting, leaving her isolated in her final days. Through honest conversations with Bronnie, Elizabeth came to understand the different levels of friendship, how many people are merely acquaintances, while true friends stand by during life's darkest moments. "I simply don't have the right friends for this occasion, for my departure," she admitted, recognizing how alcoholism had disconnected her from genuine relationships. Her drinking companions never challenged her destructive behavior because they shared her addiction, while those who truly cared had been pushed away by her bitterness and nastiness. This reflection on friendship's true nature resonated with Bronnie's own experiences. She recalled a trip to the Italian Alps with acquaintances rather than close friends. Despite the breathtaking beauty and exhilarating experiences, she had longed for her old friends who would have understood her humor and shared her joy more deeply. Sometimes we need particular people who truly know us, who see beyond our surface and connect with our authentic selves. Harry, another client, emphasized this truth from his deathbed. Friendship is about being accepted as who you are, not as who someone else wants you to be, he explained, demonstrating this through his own stream of jovial visitors who brought him great joy despite his declining health. When Bronny shared how some of her relationships had changed over time, Harry responded wisely, "That's natural too. Friends will come and go throughout life. That's why we should value them while they are here." After a six-day solitary healing walk along ancient river paths, Bronny returned to find Harry significantly weakened but still insistent about friendship's importance. "It's not just about staying in touch with your friends," he advised. "It is about giving yourself the gift of their company too." His words continued to resonate after his peaceful passing, reminding Bronny to balance the seriousness of palliative care work with the lightness only friends can provide. Elizabeth eventually reconnected with two old friends before her death, experiencing their immediate forgiveness and support. She passed surrounded by love, having learned to value true friendship, leaving Bronny with her wisdom. "Don't lose touch with friends who accept you as you are. They're worth more than anything in the end." These stories collectively reveal that authentic friendship isn't just a pleasant addition to life, but an essential component of a well-lived existence. True friends provide not only companionship, but also acceptance, perspective, and the courage to be ourselves, gifts whose value becomes most apparent when life draws to a close. Rosemary was a pioneering female executive who had risen through corporate ranks long before women commonly held such positions. Her professional success, however, followed personal trauma, escaping an abusive marriage that had nearly killed her. The experience hardened her heart and reshaped her thinking. She found validation through professional achievement in a male-dominated world, advancing through fierce determination, high intelligence, and relentless work ethic. The possibility of another relationship never entered her mind again. Her intimidating manner and bossy behavior carried into her treatment of caregivers until she met Bronny. She respected Bronny's banking background, but eventually reached a breaking point with her nastiness. When Bronny confronted her, sitting beside her through her outburst rather than leaving, Rosemary's walls began crumbling. "I'm so scared and lonely. Please don't leave me," she confessed. Their relationship transformed as Rosemary shared her past and acknowledged her pattern of pushing people away. One day, she complained about Bronny's perpetual happiness, asking why she was always humming and cheerful. Bronny explained that happiness was a choice she made daily, despite facing her own serious health crisis while caring for Rosemary. When Rosemary admitted she didn't know how to be happy and didn't think she deserved it because of her divorce's impact on her family name, Bronny encouraged her to simply allow herself permission. "You are a beautiful woman, and you deserve to know happiness," she told her. Gradually, Rosemary began smiling more, occasionally laughing, and accepting happiness as her health continued declining. When Rosemary finally accepted her approaching death, she declared, "I wish I'd let myself be happier. What a miserable person I have been. I just didn't think I deserved to be." She realized happiness was her own choice, that we can be whoever we allow ourselves to be. Kath, another philosophical client, explained that despite loving her work with troubled youth, she had focused too much on results rather than enjoying the process. "We all have talents to share. What matters is that you are trying to make a conscious contribution," she said, emphasizing how she had robbed herself of happiness by depending on end results rather than appreciating each day. Perhaps the most profound perspective came from Lenny, whose life had been filled with tragedy. Orphaned by 14, he had lost a son in Vietnam, a daughter to a car accident, and another son to mental illness. His beloved wife, Rita, had died in her 40s after a brief illness. Yet here he was, insisting he'd had a good life, because "I have known love, and it is love that has not lessened for one day in all of these years." In his final moments, Lenny shared a pure, radiant smile of uninhibited joy before peacefully passing on, teaching both Bronny and Roy, the Bible reading volunteer, that in the end, only love matters. These stories collectively reveal that happiness isn't dependent on circumstances, but on perspective and choice. Even amidst suffering, we can choose to focus on love, gratitude, and the beauty that remains. This isn't naive optimism, but a profound recognition that joy is our birthright, not something to be earned or achieved, but simply allowed and embraced. After 8 years of caring for the dying, Bronnie found herself both elated and exhausted. Though countless positive changes had unfolded in her life through this work, she was ready for something new and pursued teaching songwriting in women's prisons. Finding a charming cottage in the Lower Blue Mountains, she created a home that reflected her newfound stability and purpose. Yet, beneath her conscious awareness, destructive patterns of low self-worth lingered. Suddenly, she was flung into the darkest depths of depression. Her energy disappeared completely, as if someone had unplugged her. She woke sobbing before her first conscious thought. Even vacuuming became a massive achievement when previously she could have cleaned 5 houses, gone to lunch, walked miles, and swum for hours. True healing required facing everything: the pain, acknowledgement of suffering, opportunity for growth, need for healing, and finding strength. Release came through crying, writing, and for the first time, primal screaming. She abandoned her sentimental theory that learning is like unfolding a rose, deciding instead that growth is more like peeling a large onion, each layer making us cry harder. Meditation remained her lifeline throughout this darkness. It had taught her that suffering results from the mind, helping her observe her thoughts without identifying with them. Twice daily meditation allowed her to access stillness and love beneath the turmoil, giving her discipline when everything else felt chaotic. Eventually, utterly exhausted, she reached the absolute bottom, scrawling a farewell note. At the very moment she finished, the phone rang, a cheerful stranger offering ambulance insurance. The irony broke her suicidal spell. She realized she didn't want to damage the body that had carried her through everything. In that pivotal moment, she understood her tender heart had endured enough suffering and needed love, from herself first. Depression vanished overnight, taking its heavy darkness with it. It had only been waiting for self-love to arrive. Every day revealed fresh delights, almost like discovering life for the first time. Happiness, joyous and guilt-free, became her natural state. Birds sang to her, followed her through paddocks. Her senses heightened dramatically, sounds clearer, colors brighter, noticing 30 different shades of green in the countryside. Space and clarity emerged within her. Her past became irrelevant, except for its wisdom. The suffering that shaped her had played its role and disintegrated. Nothing to prove, nothing to explain, nothing to justify. Her face ached from smiling. Living presently became her way of life after years of practice. Doors of opportunity swung open. Past creative efforts gained momentum, with new writing opportunities arriving from unexpected sources. Self-love had opened these doors. Everything had been waiting for her readiness. Support systems built themselves around her professionally and personally. She felt closer than ever to those beautiful people she'd cared for in their passing. This new life unfolding was exactly what they had glimpsed as once possible when speaking of their regrets. In their final days, they saw what potential joy life had offered, if only they'd lived differently. Not everyone died with regrets. Some were beautifully content or accepting of their lives. But many had regrets and a strong desire to be heard. Their shared wisdom left Bronnie determined not to feel the same at her own end. Having endured her biggest tests, she understood how difficult the challenges could be, but also how joyous the rewards were. The fulfillment glimpsed by dying people is available to all of us now. Each regret shared by the dying takes courage and love to conquer. Be who you are, find balance, speak honestly, value those you love, and allow yourself to be happy. When challenges arise and you wonder how it will all come together, remember that what your heart wants, wants you too. Take action, then let go. Stand tall, breathe deeply, and walk proudly, knowing your prayers have been heard. Just smile and know.